Hey, Glenn from Made by Folk here. In this episode, I catch up with Mitch Paoni, creative director and partner at design studio Dia. Dia are renowned for innovative branding and motion design for industry leaders like Squarespace, MailChimp, and recently Pinterest, amongst many others. In our conversation, we talk about creating commercially ready content with brand motion systems, the intricate dance between artistic ingenuity and pragmatic implementation, and becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable when it comes to learning new skills. I hope you enjoy this interview. Mitch, thank you very much for joining me today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome. I've been a fan of Dia's work for quite some time. I think the first time it really popped up on my feed and I took a much greater interest in your work was when you launched the Squarespace work, purely because it was such a great shift and it really moved the brand like, centuries forward, I felt. And a big part of that was the motion work that you guys did for Squarespace. And what initially brought us to chat was this article that you shared on, I read it on LinkedIn, where you questioned how many companies actually help brands develop a motion system, but often it's not then actually implemented in practice. So it's all shiny and gorgeous on a portfolio, but when you look at the output, the actual work that you see in a day-to-day from that brand, it usually doesn't match up. And I guess what the article that you wrote stated was you wanted to make sure that Pinterest as a client has all the tools and capabilities to make that work that you've provided for years to come and actually enable its internal design teams to really bring that brand to life the way you envisioned it. So today I'd love to kind of just dive into that in a little bit more detail and actually see how can we do that as designers? How can we make that happen more regularly? But maybe as a initial intro, you could talk us through, where brands are at this stage and how motion plays a bigger part in that landscape of adding that additional layer to bring a brand to life.
Right. I mean, if you look at things today, primarily brands are living within screens, web and definitely social media. And that's like the primary ad buys for the large companies that we work in, even small companies, just whether it's organic social, paid social, that's the majority of, stuff that's happening. Now, there's certainly sometimes you have out of home and, these things and screens, but those tend to have less impressions to the audience than the social media feed. So right there, you have, it's very obvious that the way the social media platforms have set it up for motion, it's like when you go to TikTok, it's basically going to TV short form. Instagram's basically gotten there. Everything is already in motion. So to even, not to kind of short sell this, but to even compete with the content that's going in there, you have all this flood of stuff, having just like a static image of nice brand design is not going to cut through. So thinking about how that behavior and how motion can come through and how to look at that from a systematic standpoint, like, a very specific way a brand can move, can cut through, and then there becomes consistency in the motion and how that can be viewed within, consistent pieces of brand communications from a, specific company. This has been kind of, I think it's good that you brought up Squarespace because that was like, to us, that same mentality was thought of during that project because we're like, everything's going social, everything's moving. We need to think about this project in that fashion because where the brand's living is going to be living, breathing and moving. And, sure there's going to be some posters and stuff for out of home buys, but that's like less important, I think. So then the emphasis really became, how to activate brands in a screen-based environment. And, as we continue to go in the future, that's just going to become more and more and more a reality for us.
Maybe with that initial example of Squarespace, how much did you have to push for that approach? Or was that kind of part of the initial brief when you started working together?
So that Squarespace was, I think, probably like it's one of these like magical projects where everything kind of stars align. So David Lee is the chief creative officer, and then Nesson Higson was also, I think, an executive creative director, approached us, just said, we're interested in what you're doing. We don't really know anything more than that, but let's just meet and talk and see how that can impact Squarespace as a company. There was no RFP, there was no brief, there was just meetings and discussions about, hey, we're thinking about design this way, and then we think Squarespace could benefit from a lot of this thinking. And then that essentially, we basically wrote the brief together for the project back in 2018. Perfect. So that's literally the best case scenario for any branding job, where this great client is like, we trust you and think what you're doing is cool, but we don't really know what it is. So you can come and explain it to us, and then give us the opportunity to then like completely overhaul the whole thing. So I will say that probably will never happen again in my career that was that smooth, but I think they knew right away. You know, they're obviously, they design websites and tools for businesses and stuff. So it's just very obvious that they utilized some of the thinking that we were doing, and more in an experimental sense. Then we were doing some stuff for Nike and did this big thing for A-Track, this DJ. So there were smaller projects that kind of touched a nerve for them. They're like, well, we could scale that into a larger branding system. So that kind of just magically worked out.
Amazing. I mean, that's lucky. As you said, it doesn't happen often enough. But bringing it back to the Pinterest work, then, how do you feel like, how do you strike that balance between making something that's practical and that the team can sort of repeat in a consistent way, and also trying to be innovative and pushing the brand forward? How do you find that balance between the two?
So I think the practicality is, I think, really, I think, core to how we think about design in the studio. So if we're creating something and it is, there's a lot of friction and the reproducibility of that, then generally those even whether it's static design or motion, those concepts don't make it into the presentation. Because, you know, we think, especially in the, like this, you know, if I'm doing like a cool project for restaurant stuff where it's all like the studio doing it, then great. But if you have to then engage another creative team to produce assets, those pain points and frictions that we're having in the studio on, maybe it's a really cool idea, but it requires 3D and all this crazy stuff, is going to have even more of a problem once that's, you know, working within the client side. So what we think of is, everything is a toolkit. Everything we have to do, we have to think of it as a toolkit. We can change the text quickly. Somehow the illustration system or a graphic system needs to quickly adjust depending on what content's put in there. So how we're designing stuff is already set up in the thinking of that this will be a template. Like, even the first presentation we'll share, this stuff is templatized to us. We know there's probably some work we need technically to get it figured out, but to us, essentially, there's already templates set up right out the gate. And it seems like, and I say that because template sounds like a simple thing, but it's quite complicated when you see like Pinterest or the Squarespace animations, or in a lot of the other projects we've done. But Pinterest, everything that you see in that case study, it's like a file you can open up, lorem ipsum text, like input for content and input for this, and then you can hit render. So it's like once it gets down to production, it's, you know, it should take less than 5 minutes to produce like a social media post or even a longer form edit. Once all those pieces have been templatized and built into like a larger toolkit that they can use.
Yeah. And then in this example, you mentioned friction a couple of times there. How do you determine that friction? Are you actually like testing this with the in-house teams to see how they're making use of it? Or,
yeah, I think Pinterest is kind of peculiar because we work directly with their animation department throughout the project. So, and they had ambitions to everything they wanted, like every single thing they wanted to be set up in like a low friction. So like, that was a lot of work for us to figure out. It's like, how can we create a 30-second commercial that's like modular and frictionless that we can hand off to a team? So just like every little detail, like the button pop-ups, like we would have even like the, like if you needed to put typography within like a UI piece, that was all like, we basically scripted in After Effects these mini tools to do that. So like, you just type in like, you know, click this in and type it in, like it fits in the button that already kind of works. Animations built in. So all these micro details got this kind of this like templated out. So then what you could do is just like string them together. You have like this plus this plus this plus this, throw it in an edit, and then boom, and it all sort of renders out and works. And even the transitions, like every single detail within a motion piece was like considered, like how can we like turn this into like a toolkitable asset. So it was like really difficult, and I was like, these guys don't have to do any work once we hand it off. It was like funny because we're like, we created a great situation because they can just, it's like easy for them just to make stuff. And I think that was great for them because then they're like, oh, I have this great toolkit and I don't have to like work late nights to try to figure out the animation keyframing for this specific piece. It's already built in. So then they can just, it becomes really, I don't know the word. Efficiency is, I think, a big term that gets thrown around here. It's like just super fast, and it's all baked into everything. So, but yeah, that was hard because it was a lot of detail.
That's great. Like the efficiency also then provides. I mean, most internal teams have short deadlines and last minute requests, and then you can still actually deliver a really high quality output because all those building blocks are already in place. I mean, it's definitely worth the effort.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've already touched on a couple of items there on how to craft a system like this. So like working together closely with the team, trying to figure out how are they using their tools? How can you enable and upgrade those tools to make that happen? How often then do you have to sort of, you know, train clients to use a tool that they're unfamiliar with? Or do you always try and bring it back to what the client already uses?
So basically there's kind of like a transition phase when they take over everything. There's usually multiple workshops on the tools with the teams that are working in production. So we go through the projects and everything. And on top of that, I mean, it's either myself or Daniel or Deanna. A lot of it's like literally like a tutorial, like screen recorded, upload file here, click this, like screen, like just basically tutorials if you're going to YouTube. And like, it's funny cause like, I'm sure my voice is, they have to go back and hear my voice after working with us for like 9 months and like, oh, I got to hear Mitch like walk through this thing. But yeah, literally like that's supplemented within the whole guideline, the whole system. It's like, here is basically the tutorial to do this. And everything's really done in a way that's quite simple. It's like, you know, the steps are minimal. It's like, this is where you need to upload a file. This is where you need to hit render. So it's to a point where it's not like a dense animation tutorial. It's really for someone who doesn't have much experience in After Effects, or if at all, they can, I think someone without it could get in, do a tutorial, figure it out, and then be able to execute on some of the work. So that's really important that the workshops plus a tutorial are part of that. So then, you know, there's really no questions asked once it's getting into production.
I mean, from a really practical question though, like how do you then provide these guidelines and these tutorials as a deliverable? Is it literally just like a folder structure with some individual PDFs in combination with video, or do you use a tool to deliver these?
Typically, and this has been like something we've had big discussions on, like Keynote is really the best thing that holds a ton of video. So if you think about, rather than like a you know, brand guidelines, you have like the big, you know, PDF. Like look at our brand guidelines are more like an indexing system to all of the different toolkits. So then you have render that points you to the file name, and then you have all this like, you know, content organization indexing of everything, and then you have an After Effects file that matches that one-to-one. So you know what folders go. I see this render, I go to this folder. I see this render, I go to this project. So I know exactly what I'm working on. And then on top of that, depending on the client, I think this, we were planning on doing one for Pinterest where we'll actually develop a proper animation software. And this project had never came to fruition, but for like social media teams and marketing teams where there's no design, you know, staffing there, where the basically we would bake it all in code so they could just like input text, hit render. And we did something for, it's like Space 10, and did something for Squarespace a long time ago for that too, where it's like literally just built-in animation software in the web that can do like kind of lo-fi versions of what the larger toolkit could do. So it's a lot of, that's where the emphasis is. It's like this monster After Effects file, plus maybe some custom software with a supplementing keynote that wraps it up. So that's what we call brand guidelines around here. It's not like, you know, all this, you know, talking about all the brand. No, it's like literally just an index. Like, this is how to execute, you know, totally.
Amazing. I mean, I don't know if you ever, if there any of these systems are actually, you know, sometimes there are sort of publicly available systems like Uber sort of makes it very open and approachable so that people can kind of dig into it. But I wonder if there's any out there that people can actually have a look at that are open, more open source.
There was one that I don't think it's live anymore. I have to think about that. But like, even so, the Pinterest stuff is also intended for like third party. So production companies need to do a commercial, or you work with another ad agency to do something. So this gets disseminated across all of their creative partners to use. And I think that's one of the important things for them, is that when, you know, another animation company needs to do like a commercial, they still have like the specific animated assets to implement in that need to be really branded. So that's also really important, that it isn't just necessarily for the internal team. It gets to all the agencies and everybody else. They basically, so there's our stuff floating around, and maybe not totally open source, but you may know somebody in an agency that's gotten a hold of one of our toolkits.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, you know, that brands had to evolve to be more moving brands due to advertising requirements, but also, I guess, more and more products like Pinterest are in a digital space. They are digital products. Where do you see the significance or the value of animation in digital products? You know, like, I think Pinterest is a great example for that.
In the product design, because I think a lot of, like, Pinterest, we weren't involved like in the soup to nuts rebrand. It was done by Madethought, I think, a few years before. We evolved. Yeah, we had evolved things and kind of maybe changed some hierarchy within the branding structure of where the assets were. I think they had like a lot of collage stuff happening, and that kind of got, again, this is, we kind of reduced the collage because of friction problems. We're like, this collage is really difficult. Like, and everybody's struggling to make these collage assets. So like, and then the story about Pinterest is really about the user journey within the application. So we kind of pushed the pins, you know, like the kind of rounded off corner shapes with all this stuff. So that became more of the focus of where our work went. So that's, but like, I think when we get into the actual product design and animation within the product, it's, I think it's really important, but it has to be done at like 5% of what the brand is 100%, you know. It needs to be very subtle. Yeah. It needs to be implemented in ways that is not causing, like, you know, too much, you know, problems within the user experience. And I think it's important to pull that in, because it really does connect not only the visual assets, but like the breathing assets and the moving assets into the product, so that brand experience becomes really seamless. But it's subtle. It has to be subtle. And I think if it gets crazy in there and stuff popping around, it's like, you know, I don't want my button to like bobble, you know? So there's, I think there's always like this range of expression that we talk about, not only in just how the visual design assets are, but animation assets are the same. Like, product stuff could be like 5%, you know, like brand forward messaging could be like maxed out, like the full throttle. And even within the toolkits, there is usually stages of expression. We'll have like a minimal, medium, max. So right there, you already have the options within to do something minimal to the wild out stuff. And there's like range within that, within the toolkit too.
Let's take a quick break, because I'd like to tell you more about Current, the place to see all of your team's work. We've all been there. It's Monday morning, and you're back at work after a weekend that felt just a little bit too short. You know, last week the team made a ton of progress, but you can't remember which files to look at, which tools to open, which Slack channel that link was shared to. Now imagine your team was using Current. Current integrates with all the tools that your team is already using to let you see all the work in one place and give you and your team better alignment. And at the end of each week, Current's AI-powered newsletter automatically summarizes all the work posted and shares it with everyone so that your Monday can start a little less chaotic. Go and visit current.so and transform how you work. Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask, like, is that are those ranges defined then, like, also across the different touch points, or is this then mostly more, okay, here's a motion piece for an ad. You have sort of various ranges within that. Or did you already give some guidance on when it's for marketing purposes, you know, go more in this direction, when it's product specific, go more in this direction?
Yeah, so how we typically figure this out, this is very collaborative with the client. You know, we have done all this exploration, and then we've already decided kind of what the right ranges are. And then we start to map, like, where things should live. Because, we, you know, as a design studio, we're not, like, as much as we've been downloaded all the information and all of the content from the company, we're still not, like, in the trenches, and we don't know it that well. So what happens is, you know, that team kind of sees what we did. It's like, that works really good for you know, marketing the product, but this one works really good for this. So then you start to build a big kind of, like, kind of chart where these kind of silos live of expression. And then from there, that's when the toolkit really gets developed, because then we'll start to actually build out those assets for, you know, this goes for marketing, this goes for, you know, product, this goes to B2B or whatever. And then it gets mapped out. So then there's, you know, this is the max expression, this is the medium, this is the minimal. And then there's, like, a list below of, like, if the content is discussing one of these, it's going to get this, you know, range of expression attached to it. So that's, it's a lot of, yeah, charting and organizing.
I mean, it's a lot, like, you guys have to do a lot of forward thinking in terms of, okay, where are the potential pitfalls? Like, maybe have you got any examples from the work on Pinterest of, was there anything that you didn't foresee that then kind of came up in development where you're like, oh man, we hadn't even imagined this was going to be a problem. We'll have to build a further extension of this toolkit.
I think the request from Pinterest is fun because they basically, the ambition was, like, to be able to do a 30-second commercial that was, like, turnkey. And so, and the problem with that is that you're starting to deal with, like, linear narrative marketing or narrative advertising pieces versus brand communications, which are, like, more textural things, you know, things that are like Squarespace. It's like, it just moves, it feels like Squarespace. So then when you have to start to tell a story in a linear fashion using templated assets, it gets a lot harder because you want it to be customizable to the story of what they were saying. Yeah. So we were trying to, like, pull them away from that because they were just creating one-offs. Like, here's a script, here's a new animation, here's a script, new animation. And that's, like, so much work for a production team because they have to look at the script, come up with something fresh for the new script. So what we had to do is try to deconstruct the elements that we saw in all the previous examples that, and somehow turn that into some sort of systematic thinking that then they could kind of weave a narrative structure to it. That was really hard because, and personally, I don't like doing narrative animation. I started doing that when my career, we were doing motion graphics and doing film titles and stuff. I just didn't like storyboarding stuff out and animating. It was just always, like, annoying. You know, you're, like, at the board stand, you're like, oh, I got to make this thing happen. Whereas when you thought of animation in a systematic way, it's like, cool. We, like, it's just like the typeface, just like the colors. And now we have the movement figured out. So it just, the system thing, and it solves all the problems for you because it's already figured out. So to do that within a narrative context just makes it exponentially harder. But I think we got it pretty close. And I think this is when the range of expression comes in, because then you have these options that you can play with within a narrative edit. And then it covers enough range that it looks very individual or custom to that piece. But that was hard. I don't recommend doing that.
I can only imagine. It sounds so difficult.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one thing, I listened to a great podcast that you did with, let me remind myself of the name so I can recommend it to others. It was with Liam Spradlin for the Google Design podcast called Design Notes. And you talked a lot about sort of getting comfortable with learning new tools and trying tools and experiences and trying to push yourself and get in being comfortable with being uncomfortable in those spaces. I think a lot of people that I mentioned to that I'm speaking to were like, can you ask him all the tools that they use? Because I'm sure it's just going to be After Effects and I don't want to use After Effects. I'm one of those guys who started using After Effects in uni and then haven't touched it ever since because it always felt like such a, sort of overcomplicated tool. But maybe you could give us sort of like a brief, you know, how do you encourage those teams to take that approach and be happy to be uncomfortable in those and learn those tools?
I mean, this is something I like say all the time is, you know, how to solve creative block. It's just open up a tutorial on YouTube and that's something that's out of your comfort zone and start playing with it. Then you have new ideas on how to make stuff every single time. Yeah. It could be like some German 16-year-old German kid like setting stuff on fire in After Effects, like not like a cool design project, but like it's funny you bring that interview up because that was like I think 2017, so it's like almost 6 years ago, and that was really in that ripe phase of the studio where we were just making stuff and exploring stuff and trying to figure out how it all means in the context of a larger design scape. And that hasn't really changed for us, but we've figured out how to make it very practical over the years. But I think that I always say that because that's whether it's new tool or new technique or something, it's like there's this friction of, you know, oh, this is going to be hard or annoying, you know. But then, like, if you force yourself to get through that kind of like your personal, like, it's just basically, I don't know, this fear that you're not going to be good at it. So that if you punch through it and then just like do it and then apply your own sensibility and taste to it, generally like produces some interesting results. So before I get into like the actual technical things, like that mentality became very central to the studio. So Daniel Winsel has been with us for 6 years. Deanna Spraz has been with us 10 years. And then Meg and I. So it's been just us, you know, with this kind of exploring, experimental attitude, just making stuff. And then
managed to keep that spirit going? Like, are you still trying to push for that experimentation in your collaboration internally?
Definitely. And I think this is like the luxury of the team. I mean, luckily we've been working together for so long. Like Daniel is an insane creative coder. He like has imposter syndrome. He doesn't think he is, but I was like, well, he scripted 90% of the toolkit in Pinterest. So like, you know, a lot of scripting, a lot of coding is going into the work, but it's not like custom tools necessarily. Yeah. It's like building within an After Effects. And then, so there's always like sketches and ideas that then get explored, like whether it's using Cinema 4D to do it, we'll try it in After Effects, we'll try it in Creative Code. We'll use all of the things, you know, within a brief to see where it can be pushed, knowing where the pitfalls might be. We like Cinema 4D, but it's hard to use that in a toolkit sense because it requires renders and texturing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Creative Code's really good, but then it gets difficult to export like SGVs or SVG files or vector files or print. So then After Effects, you can't really use print, but you can if you want to like max out your comp size. So there's all these like things that these modes were never designed to do. Like After Effects never designed to do like high res print, but we've used it for high res print before, but it breaks the computer, but it's we've literally found the limit of where the software can manage. But I'll take a step back to make this a little more approachable, because After Effects doesn't need to be scary at all. Really, if you look at projects like Squarespace or Pinterest, I don't want to use Pinterest as an example because it's so complicated and all the assets, but like some of our other projects, the animation behaviors are really simple. You see type moving in a very consistent way. And the key is, and through my years even teaching, when I taught animation and design, kind of brought it together, it's using the least amount of keyframes to do the most amount of work. So, and it was looking at it almost like if anybody's like a beat maker or a DJ, it's the same. You know, you make your little loop, you like have an animation that's like looping, you have something cool, and then you like add to it. And then you extend out the timeline. So then it starts to create itself like a musical composition. Whereas like if I'm storyboarding a 30 second commercial, I have to design it all. That's like so much work and so much annoying. But if you just have like two or three behaviors applied to like a circle and a font, and then you just kind of like start to design with these pre-animated things, then you're like, whoa, all of a sudden I have really dynamic animated design compositions with doing literally the most basic things you can do in After Effects, just like two keyframes on the end of the comp just going like this. So that, like, I think opens
up a lot.
It sounds
so easy when you see it. It sounds so simple. But I love that general approach and mentality, and something that I can definitely take away from listening to that podcast in particular and speaking to you. I think it's just sort of being a little bit more unafraid to try something that you're not going to be good at. You know,
yeah.
Like you can't expect to just open any software and be able to use it. You know, like you compared it to learning an instrument. You know, you kind of mm-hmm. have to like start with some basic chords, you know, so you have to sort of build that skill over time, and then at some point it becomes second nature.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just being open to that initial failure is definitely something that I'm going to learn from you.
That's like one of my biggest takeaways. You know, it's like it's finding the routine that gets you in that learning environment, like on a daily basis, where it doesn't become, I need to be a master. But if you put 5 years and 10 minutes in a day, and then you're like, oh, all of a sudden I'm good at this. You like wake up and realize you're actually proficient. So you've taken away like the expectation of being good, I guess.
Yes. Yes. That's the initial tricky part. Well, to round us off, I'd love to just kind of hear, what's your perspective then on the future of studios like Dia collaborating with big internal teams? Like, I mean, obviously the examples where you have made this work, I think have shown a tremendously positive outcome. Is this something that then comes quite natural when you're talking to new clients, or is this still something that you kind of have to motivate and fight for in a project?
I think it's hard to say this because I think we have like a fairly luxurious position. Being a small studio,
sure.
we immediately have conversations with clients and know if like this is going to be worth it or the collaboration is going to be good. We're actually going to release a new project today. It was a 15 month long rebranding project for Flowdesk, which is basically funny. We've done like MailChimp, Works, Squarespace, and Flowdesk is like a very small version competitor. We basically just do work with competing companies. But it was similar. It was like, it was exactly this. And it was like custom typeface, the whole design system, animation system, toolkits, product design, like the whole thing. But it was one of these things where we sat down, I think it was at the Off conference in last year, we just sat down and had a conversation. You know, they like really love what you did for these companies. You know, how does this work out? Give us a sense of how much money we're going to lose, you know, these kind of things. And then, then it just kind of organically came together. So I think for us, it's important that the client is willing to not understand the process and be along for the ride in the development, because it's a bumpy road. Yeah. I think a lot of these projects typically, you know, you never really know, but I think for us, yeah, we can kind of select and choose who we want to do that with for now. Maybe change in the future. But I think as a larger picture, I would encourage like, you know, other studios or other designers to start to think about, you know, not necessarily like the great case study that's going to come out of it. You know, hopefully you're confident in your design skills and how to sell work through during the presentation, that you're happy with the work that you finish with. But honestly, like to me, if those things aren't, isn't viewed on the client's website, isn't viewed on their channels to the extent of what you're happy with, and I feel like there's a sense of failure there, that we didn't do our jobs to complete the path through the end. And I think I get really excited when I see work that's implemented years beyond a studio's engagement and even improves over time because the system was left in a way that was really helpful for them and excites them to work. And I think thinking about that more so than, you know, making sure that we have good case studies is like really, really important. And then hopefully if the client's trusting you, you're going to create a great project. It's going to work out. So
definitely. No, the reason I wanted to talk to you because it instantly struck a nerve with me. Like I feel like we should aim to provide clients with the tools to enabled to actually carry your vision forward. And like you said, sort of see it grow and improve over time because you made it flexible and practical in a way that still is exciting for designers to view and to experience, but also, you know, can live in the real world and actually function.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, Mitch, it's an absolute pleasure talking to you. I could talk to you for another hour.
Me too.
But let's leave it there on this topic at least, and we'll catch up on another topic some other day.
Definitely. Well, thanks a lot. And hopefully this is interesting for people that taking a listen to it. So, but yeah, maybe we'll have another chat someday.
Always super interesting to me. And that's like my guiding principle. If I can learn something, then hopefully somebody else can learn something.
Perfect.
As well. Mitch, thank you very much.
You got it. All right. Take care.